because I usually start the story in 2018 with Zendaya's Joan of Arc outfit at the Met Gala, but that was actually the final piece in something that had been cooking for a long time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Try Reading Podcast with me, your book-obsessed host, Gabriel. This is episode 49. I cannot believe it. 49 freaking episodes full of icons and many more iconic episodes to come, but I'll stop my blabbing. I want you all to see who today's guest is because an icon is in our presence, people. Put your hands in the air for the debut author, Camilla Cole. Woo, the crowd is screaming. The fans are going wild. Okay, people, calm down. Hi, Camilla. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing so well. I am doing less well after that intro because, gosh, you just told so many lies
No.
to all of these people. If anyone here is an icon, it is you.
Thank you. You're too kind. But no, I mean, as I was saying before we started, you're the one with the published book on the way. And I mean, oh my gosh, I just aspire to be like you. So I am so excited to be talking with you.
I'm so excited to be here. I really can't believe that my book comes out in 2 months at this point. Like, this is...
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Tomorrow it will be 2 months. Yeah. That's crazy.
Let's not talk about the passage of time. I will have an existential crisis right here on this podcast. But yeah, it's really exciting because this has been a dream of mine for a really long time. And I'm so excited and honored to be here.
Oh, well, that means so much. And listeners, let me tell you a little bit about the fabulous Camilla Cole. Camilla is a pseudonym for a Jamaican-born, American-raised author. By day, she works in publishing, and by night, she frantically types words she hopes to see in a book on shelves one day. In the past, she has also worked as a journalist and at a hotel, two jobs that give you amazing stories to tell at parties. I can only imagine.
I have seen some things, guys.
Oh my goodness, I bet. You know, if she went to parties, but her words, not mine. I'm sure you are so iconic and going to be invited to so many parties.
No, Gabriel is telling you all that I'm actually a loser. That's not in my bio. But no,
I wrote this myself.
Yes. He's just roasting me. It's fine. Right.
A graduate of New York University, Camilla is currently based in the tri-state area, where she's usually playing Kingdom of Hearts for the 100th time, quoting early SpongeBob SquarePants episodes, or crying her way through Zuko's redemption arc in Avatar: The Last Airbender.
I love my baby.
Her debut novel, So Let Them Burn, the first book in her YA fantasy duology, is set to be published with Little Brown on January 16th, 2024, and I am so beyond excited. And her second novel, The Sinister Elite, which is a speculative dark academia thriller set to publish through Poison Pen Press in a two-book deal, is set for publication summer 2025. Somebody get me a time machine because you can find me in 2025 grabbing that book off the shelves.
Just really excited because as many people as have been expressing excitement for my debut in YA, they've also expressed similar excitement for my debut in adult. And for someone like me, who the two books are so different, like, that's just been really great to hear. So thank you.
Of course. Oh my gosh. No, I am so excited. The minute you posted about it on Instagram, it was like Goodreads immediately. And I was so excited. And the art you had for it when you posted the book deal was so pretty. And it sounds amazing. So I can't wait.
Thank you. Thank you.
Of course. Well, Camilla, I am so excited to be talking with you today. And I cannot wait to learn more about you and your iconic books. So thank you for being here.
There's that word iconic again. You are just cruising for so much disappointment because in fact, I am just a dork, but, thank you so much for your interest. I think that you've been like one of my earliest supporters actually, since I announced the book and like you reached out and like you were really excited about it. So I just want to say like, thank you for existing.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that's why I say you're the icon. But yeah, I'm really excited to, oh gosh, I have a book coming out and here comes the crisis.
Well, I will take that early supporter badge and wear it proudly because wow. Oh my gosh, what an honor. And, let's see. I was trying to remember where I first heard about the book. I have to go back and think about it, but I know, you know, the cover was out when I heard about it because, oh my God, that cover is stunning. And it immediately drew me to it. And then I was like, well, dragons, like, hello.
Well, shout out to my artist, Taj Francis, who did the art, and my designer, Jenny Lai, who did the composition. I love my cover so much. And I hope the book lives up to it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it, I mean, I'm halfway through and it's so good. So, and I know so many readers are going to love it. So it already does.
I forgot you might compliment me as a part of this. I will try not to like fling myself to the ground crying.
Right. It's not a full roast show. There is also compliments.
Lulling me into a false sense of security. Got it. Yes. Okay. I'm ready.
Well, I do have to ask, what is your current read?
Current read. Ooh, I am reading so many things because, okay, so in the winter fall time, I'm like all about like contemporary reads because they're like warm and happy. So I'm currently reading the Knock 'Em Out series by Lucy Score. So I've read Things We Never Got Over, and then I read Things We Hide from the Light is what I'm currently in the middle of. But I also have some blurb books that I want to shout out because I'm reading Immortal Dark by my friend Tigus, who it's about vampires and dark academia, and it comes out in 2024, and it's so good. So guys, add Immortal Dark to Goodreads because I am reading it and I'm currently obsessed. And also add Blood Justice by Terry J. Benton Walker, who is my friend. It's the sequel to Blood Debts, and I'm obsessed with that too.
Yeah, oh my gosh, both of those I am excited for. And I was trying to remember when you said the title of the first one, I was like, where? I just literally saw a TikTok about it that the author had posted.
Dark.
Yeah. And yeah, oh my gosh. Well, I mean, vampires and dark academia, like two of the best things merged into one.
And it lives up to that pitch. It's so good. I'm like jealous that I didn't write this book.
Well, that is so exciting. And yeah, two really wonderful releases. Well, as we talked about before we started recording, I'm reading your book, So Let Them Burn. And it's so exciting. No, oh my gosh, I love it. It's just giving me all the best vibes. I talked about it on the last episode I recorded. I was about to start it and I was coming off of this 2 month reading slump. And so I was like, this is my fourth wing. This is my hype book. Like, this is the thing that I'm excited for and will be anticipating. And yeah. And it's just like, I can already tell it's getting me out of this reading slump. It's like just the excitement of it and just the fun and just, it's so thrilling. And yeah, I love it so much. It's so exciting. And I mean, yeah, who doesn't love dragons too?
I just think that's like a bigger honor than just saying you like the book, because reading slumps can be so heavy and you can be reading something. And even if you love it, suddenly you have never read a word in your life and you literally can't get through it. So for my book to be breaking that for you, honored.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't know what happened, but it was like, I read The Honeys by Ryan LaSala. And
oh my God, I can't wait to read that.
Oh,
one.
It's so good. Oh my gosh. And
I
then
love
it was like,
Ryan LaSala.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think it put me in a reading slump because I was like, nothing will ever beat this. So
I need to wait until it's like spring, but because I'm like afraid of bees, but I love horror. So I'm like, I need to read this at the time when it will like maximum scare me when the bees are out.
Absolutely. I should have done that. Yeah. I mean, I was attacked by bees. Oh, that's a story for another time. But
oh,
I was
God.
Like a swarm of yellow jackets when I was like in middle school. And so I'm actually really proud of myself for loving this book so much.
So when are you dropping your bee-related horror novel? Because like that tease alone, I need to read it.
Well, I'll have to conference Ryan in and ask him about bees, and because I don't know enough, but yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, anyways, I'm loving it so much. You are such a fantastic writer and I just can't wait to learn even more about the book.
Oh gosh. Thank you so much. You're
of
great.
Of course. Well, I have a couple or just one podcast shout out where I just talk about upcoming releases from previous guests. And the one today is super exciting because she was the first author on season 2 and Her book has been long awaited, and that is on December 5th, Caught in a Bad Fomance by Elle Gonzalez Rose releases. I am so excited. I'm so proud of Elle, and I cannot wait to read this book. It was literally a year ago that I reached out to Elle now, and to think now the book is coming out is so exciting. The story just sounds so fun. I can't wait. I'm just like obsessed with the cover. I'm obsessed with everything she's doing. And yeah, I'm so, listeners, if you haven't heard of it somehow or you are waiting for it, make sure to read it when it releases on December 5th.
I love Elle so much as a human being. We've known each other like the way that any two authors who are mutuals on Twitter know each other, which is to say not very well at all. like we've known each other for a while, and then we ran into each other in person at Hannah V. Sawyer's event for All the Fighting Parts. And I swear I like lost my mind because Caught in a Bad Fomance, like I got to read chapter one before she got the deal, but after she got her agent, and I was obsessed with the humor. I was obsessed with like the dynamics, and I'm going to her launch event in December as well.
Oh, just my gosh. Her
because I just think Elle is a phenomenal person, and she has a pitch perfect contemporary tone for like YA, and I'm just so, so excited for her and all of her success. So yeah, guys, go buy Caught in a Bad Romance right now.
Absolutely. And if you're in, like Camila was saying, Elle is having a lot, multiple events. She's going to have New York, San Francisco, and LA. So yeah, I'm going to be at the LA one. So other side of the country, but still yeah, I'm so excited. So one book, but such an important book to shout out and so exciting.
I'm so glad this was my episode for Elle.
I know.
Like I can message her after this, like, guess what we just talked about?
It was actually the entire episode topic. We forgot to talk about your book, and we just started talking about Elle. Right.
This is the Elle Gonzalez Rose fan club now. So yeah, strap in.
Right. Exactly. We'll change the podcast title and everything. New co-host alert. Well, my first official question for you is, what was your start to the world of books and reading?
My start to the world of books and reading, the earliest thing I can remember reading is probably like my parents got me like hooked on phonics. I don't know if children do that anymore, but in my day, if you wanted to teach your child how to read, you would get them hooked on phonics. And I remember I went through, they had like booklets with like little short stories in them, and I went through the whole box so fast. And from there I went into mysteries. So I really never got into contemporary until like I was older. I went straight to genre fiction. I read Cam Jansen, which was a middle grade series about a girl with a photographic memory, and she would describe everything that was happening, and you had to use that detail to somehow solve the mystery later. I read Encyclopedia Brown, who was the son of a police chief and like some kind of genius, and he would also solve mysteries. And then I read Nancy Drew, and you will never guess what she does. So I think those were my earliest like loved reads, and they were like, you know, and Magic Treehouse, like they were just like a bunch of like something would happen, like it was formulaic, but there were like tons of them, so you could read the same characters doing the same things. And then I got into Tamora Pierce, and I just never looked back.
That's so wonderful. And such, I love the mystery love at, you know, at the beginning. And oh my gosh, the Magic Treehouse, like there was something in every single one of those books that like made it like addictive, and like you couldn't stop reading it. so
formative. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like, you could anticipate what, oh, they get in the treehouse, they're going to go somewhere, but like you loved it. And I love that.
My agent calls this, shout out to my agent who I hate, but my agent calls this a play pattern, which is like, you know, like it's formulaic, it's, you know what's going to happen, it's different every time, but it hits the same beats, and those beats are comforting. It's, you're here for those beats, for that play pattern, because you know what you're going to get, and in that sense it's like exciting and comforting at the same time. And I just really, the Magic Treehouse books did that so well. I swear, like I learned history from them.
Yeah, no, literally. That was my like history class for 7 years. Yeah.
Like, forget my textbook. I just want to follow them to their adventure.
Right. Oh my gosh, totally. And that sort of name for it that your agent used is really, it makes sense. And even like for younger kids, when you see them play like imaginary play, or sometimes you'll notice like there's a pattern. And I have a younger sister, so now putting two and two together, it makes sense, just like that comforting that you can come back to, but there can be slight differences. Yeah,
it's beautiful. She's really smart. Hate that about her. Yes, well, I love Asian guys.
I just love that it stuck with you, though, from such a young age, and it's still with you. And I know you talked about, you know, mystery and stuff, but as you went into your teen years, did you have a love for fantasy like you do now?
Yeah, I did. Like, pretty much as soon as I discovered books with magic in them, I just really never looked back to regular life. I've talked about this in a couple of places before, but I was, you know, I'm a first generation immigrant. I was born in Jamaica. I came over here when I was 5, and like the 90s were not a great time to be different. So, you know, I had my accent and I ate what I ate, and I came from where I came from, and I knew what I knew. And like, I would meet other kids who were American, and they would not be very nice about the accent or the food. So I just like wanted to belong in this world, but it was like not a very friendly world. And so I would turn and I would look at fantasy books, which, like I said, I think I started with Tamora Pierce, I think. And I would look at fantasy books, and yes, they lived in a hostile world, but they had magic to deal with it, or they would fall into a magical world like the Chronicles of Narnia. And they would just overcome their problems. But there was a it's like they had a tool, like they had a fairy godmother, but it was their own magical ability to do that. And I just really, really found those the perfect escape for me. I was like a hang out in the back of closet, leave my window open in the Bronx for Peter Pan, like walk between tree boughs in case I like end up in another world kind of kid. Like, I wanted to believe in a magic under the ordinary so badly. So fantasy, once I discovered it, just became like all I wanted to read, and eventually all I wanted to write.
Yeah. Well, it's such a powerful form of escapism, books in general, but especially fantasy. And and it was wonderful that there was this comfort from it. And it was like this safe space of getting to read about these other experiences. But it is so true that there's this, like you said, they have this magic ability, or they have something magical about it that's like their fairy godmother or something that's sort of like helping them. Yeah, just, I love that it's, yeah, stuck with you, and that you still love it, just, you know, more than ever. So much.
Yeah. Especially as we're getting toward, you know, more diverse voices being allowed into the fantasy genre, because, you know, at the time.
Right.
But now I have options.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Well, did you always want to be an author, or did that come as you got older?
I always wanted to be an author, and that is also due to the early bullying. So I'm an Aries, which means I am made of spite. So I figured from an early age that if I could not like speak better than my classmates, I could definitely write better than my classmates. And I had a first grade teacher, shout out to Mrs. Wills, who introduced the concept of what she called like 50-cent words versus $1 words, which is like, you know, like the bigger, like 4-syllable words kinds of things. And I would read the dictionary for fun so that I knew words. There's still to this day, like, I pronounce words so oddly because I've only ever seen them in the dictionary. But yeah, so from a young age, I was like, I'm going to write better than everyone. And I wanted the ultimate goal. It started as a spite thing, but the ultimate goal really did become to get published, because I loved telling stories. I want to, and you know, it's one thing to want to tell stories. That doesn't necessarily mean you need to get published, because Wattpad exists, but I wanted, you know, to see my stories on the shelf. I wanted to see, you know, my name, this is not my name, but you know, my name on a story that I wrote, something that I could physically hold in my hand and shove in someone's face and be like, I did this. So yeah, it's crazy that that's happening now.
Absolutely. And I'm sure so exciting. And, you know, like, I'm sure younger you is just like flabbergasted, and but also sort of like, we always knew, and like, obviously.
I really hope so. I have a lot of friends who, like, when I told them that I'd gotten an agent that I was going to be published, they were like, yeah, like, yeah, you've been talking right about it, like, the whole time I've known you. Like,
hey, what's the power of manifestation?
I know.
Right? Like, yeah. Well, that's so wonderful. And also, I mean, like you said, now there is obviously more and more diversity in publishing. There could always be more. But at the time, you know, also imagining like, oh my God, I could see someone like me on the shelves. And like, I'm half Puerto Rican, I'm queer. So like, when I think of when I was younger, there were, I don't remember any books with Puerto Rican main characters. So, but now I can. And so it's like, yeah, just that. Of course, that comes with time, but also for you to be able to write that is also so powerful, because you're like, oh, I'm gonna write that story that I want to see. And like, then other people are going to get to read it. And I mean, so many readers are going to feel seen from your story. So yeah, that's so amazing.
Thank you. I just remember, and the other thing is like, yes, there weren't a lot of diverse stories, but like when you did find one, it wasn't necessarily like, I remember one of the earliest, if not the earliest book, fantasy book that I read that was starring a Black main character was actually written by Rick Riordan. It was the Kane Chronicles. So it was Percy Jackson, but with Egyptian mythology. And it was my favorite because I was like, look at this Black boy doing stuff. Yay. But now, you know, I have so many options that were actually written by a Black person, you know, and it was less like, it went from being like not very many options for people who looked like me to having books for people who look like me, but they weren't written by people who look like me. And now it feels like finally we're getting that opportunity to be the ones to tell our own stories, which just feels very, very like, obviously we have a long way to go and we always will, but it's so different from when I was younger that I can't help but just be like really, really happy to be given the chance to tell my story through my characters who look like me.
Yeah. And it's just like another step in the right direction. So yeah. Well, you have talked about, obviously you've always loved fantasy and you always wanted to be an author, but did you always want fantasy to be the first genre you published?
Yes, mostly because at the time that I was, well, I shouldn't say at the time that I was writing for publication, because I've been writing for publication since I was a stupid little teenager. And I'm not saying that teenagers are stupid. I'm saying that I, as a teenager, was stupid. So since I was a teenager and read like Amelia Atwater Rhodes's like vampire books, and then, you know, Amelia Atwater Rhodes published those when like she was in her teen years. So I was like, I need to publish. And Aragon was published when Christopher Paolini was like 19. And I was like, before I turned 20, I need to write a book. And then I never wrote a book, but I wrote a lot of query letters for the books that I did not write. So early in, I thought that like I was going to publish contemporary, because I had discovered like my Meg Cabots and stuff, you know, the Princess Diaries and all of those. So I was like, I'm going to write my books. And they were all starring white people because that's what I read. And then I never finished anything. Actually, when I finally just switched to writing fantasy, I just never looked back, because I knew that contemporary or starting with contemporary would not feel true to me. I do want to write contemporary books someday, but in the same sense that I want to explore lots of genres, fantasy is my home. It's where I've always, all my favorite book, well, most of my favorite books are fantasy books, and it's where I've always just felt like I thrive. So I did like know when I actually started finishing things that I was going to debut with a fantasy. I just didn't know which one.
Yeah. And now here you are. Oh my gosh, 2 months from release. And and I know we said we won't talk about it because no existential crisis, but
we're not going to talk about the passage of time on this podcast.
But
yes, it's surreal.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Farron Vincent can channel the power of the gods. 5 years ago, she used her divine magic to liberate her island from its enemies, the dragon-riding Langlish Empire. But now, at 17, Farron is all powered up with no wars to fight. She is a legend to her people and a nuisance to her neighbors. When she's forced to attend an international peace summit, Farron expects that she will perform tricks like a trained pet and then go home. She doesn't expect her older sister Ilara forming an unprecedented bond with an enemy dragon, or the gods claiming that the only way to break this bond is to kill her sister. As Farron's desperation to find another solution takes her down a dark path, Ilara discovers the shocking secrets at the heart of the Langlish Empire. Both must make difficult choices that will shape each other's lives as well as the fate of their world. Well, wow. As I said, listeners, I know it's amazing, but for the listeners that haven't read it yet, doesn't that sound amazing and so exciting and so fun? And it truly is. It's just so captivating. It drew me in right away. I mean, before I even held the book in my hands, the description sounded amazing and just such an impossible just task as well of like, and decision of like, you know, killing your sister for this or saving your sister. And it's like, also just like, there's the connection of siblings and the story of two siblings and these two sisters, and it's so fun. I love it so much. I'm so excited. I could talk about it for hours and hours. So before I continue and just start blabbing, what was the inspiration for So Let Them Burn, and when did you come up with it?
For the fact that I like adore you by this point, I'm going to tell you more about this than I've told anyone else. So we're gonna back up, because I usually start the story in 2018 with Zendaya's Joan of Arc outfit at the Met Gala, but that was actually the final piece in something that had been cooking for a long time. So in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, we're not talking about the passage of time, I read a book by Jada Jones and Danny Bennett. It was called Have Mercy, and it was about a group of all male dragon riders, but the dragons that they rode were giant metal dragons, and they were used as war machines against an empire next to them that they were always fighting about. That's the gist. So I read that book, and it had a picture of a metal dragon on the front, and I was like, that's really cool. Back burner. So then we fast forward to when Pacific Rim came out. I love the movie Pacific Rim, and it was like giant monsters called Jaegers, made of metal and like military whatever, would fight these giant otherworldly monsters called kaiju. So that was like, ooh, giant metal creatures to fight similar like biological creatures. Put that in the back burner. Fast forward. I just randomly wrote down one day, what if they had giant metal dragons and they were using their giant metal dragons to fight real dragons that the other country owns, right? And what if there was a town and it was called Dead Egg because there was a giant dead dragon egg in the center of it? And I was like, I love these vibes. What's the plot? No idea. Write it in a notebook, put it away. Fast forward. We're covering like a decade.
Right.
So in 2018, Zendaya Coleman went to the Met Gala dressed as, I think the theme was like celestial bodies or something like that. She was Joan of Arc. And I sat there and I went, Joan of Arc can be black? Because I've been fascinated by the story of Joan of Arc for such a long time. Like, I went to Catholic school, we knew our saints. Like, I just thought she was so cool. She was this girl who heard voices, ostensibly from the saints, telling her that she needed to help free France from British colonization. So she went to war. She was 12 years old. And then when she was 19, she was burned at the stake. So she did not have a very long life. And so I saw that, and then later I saw a image manipulation by someone on Twitter called Boss Logic, and it was Zendaya dressed as Joan of Arc with her foot on the head of a dragon holding swords, and it all came together. And so next thing I know, I'm writing the first like pitch for what would eventually turn into So Let Them Burn, because I was like, what if Joan of Arc, like, instead of saving France from England, was trying to save Jamaica from England, because we were colonized, you know, by England and other places. But like the last one was England, and we broke in like 1960. Oh, I can feel my Jamaican parents cringing sometime in the 1960s. And the story just kind of came together from there. I mean, you know, it's a high fantasy world, so it's not exactly Jamaica, and the Langlish Empire is not exactly England, but like the touchstones of the story of my people are there, and it's set in a world where they have dragons, and the Irian people have like giant metal dragons that they've built out of a special metal that like you can only find on their island. And then, you know, the story just kind of really came together from there. And this is also one of the first times that I've ever written a story starring Black characters, and the first time I've ever written one starring like Jamaican inspired characters. And it just, it's wild to me that that's the story that got picked up, that got me an agent, that got me a book deal, because it just feels like I feel exposed.
Wow. Well, oh my gosh. I feel like I just went on like a journey, and that was amazing. So much information. No, please don't. Oh my gosh. No. I loved it. And I, oh my gosh. And like also, when the movie is made of this book, because obviously this is like Zendaya is going to have some part, like, I mean, I just, also, because of course, yes, that's such an iconic outfit. And I love that there was that. That was like the final piece. And
yeah.
And oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
Everyone thinks that it started there, but it actually ended there. Like that was the missing puzzle piece that I didn't even know I needed until I put it right in the center. And suddenly I had a book.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my goodness. Well, that is so exciting. And obviously, as you just shared, you know, there was, took a while for all these pieces to make the final puzzle. And now with the final draft, final copy, final edition of the book, if that copy met the very first draft of So Let Them Burn, would they recognize each other?
Not even a little bit, because it took me 2 years and 38 rewrites to get this book in a state where I wanted to send it to an agent. And then we did 2 revisions with the agent. And then with my editor, we did more of them. So by the time this book was going off to copy edits, I was so sick of it. And honestly, I barely remember anything that happens in it at this point. Yeah, it was a whole different thing. I don't think the characters even had the same names. It just,
wow. Yeah. So they would just walk right past each other and be like, cool.
Yeah.
And go their separate ways.
They didn't even have the same title. So yeah, wow. They would not recognize each other at all.
Well, that's so, I mean, first of all, you know, just shows the changes any book can go through, but just, oh my gosh, especially for this, I can only imagine just after that sort of ending of it, you're just like, I never want to see it again.
Please get this away from me. Yeah, I think after you've like looked at something so many times, it just ceases to be a book anymore. Like at the end, when I sent it in, I was like, I don't know if this book is good, but it's different.
Right. Well, I can confirm it is good. And yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And during, whether it was in the beginning with the very first draft or as you went through revisions with on your own and then with your agent and, or editor, did the world building come easy to you?
Yeah. So world building is actually my favorite part of any book. It is my dream. Hi, publishing. It is my dream to do kind of like what George R.R. Martin did with A Song of Ice and Fire, where there he has like a separate encyclopedia about the world and the characters and everything like that, because I have all of that information. Like, I love world building. If I could world build and then never come up with a plot, I would do that. that time when I was telling you about my notebook with the like different dragons fighting each other and there's a town, like that is a notebook just devoted to worlds that I have no plot for yet. I just really love world building. I always have. I just, it's a kind of like daydreaming about somewhere else that I could be instead of where I am. So it's always come pretty easy to me. Though I do have to admit that my world building is largely based on vibes. Don't ask me about the sewage system. Don't ask me where I'm getting water from. Don't ask me if it makes sense to have a mountain there. Like, it is all vibes. And if it doesn't make sense, magic did it.
I love that. And honestly, that's like the best, because when you're reading a book too, there's so much of it is vibes and just like, so that, you know, then it just radiates that energy of just excitement. And yeah, well, you had said also earlier that they're, you know, they didn't have the same titles, but, you know, comparing the one now and to the original draft, what, if you can share, what was that title process like, or what were the other titles that you thought about?
So I've been, oh gosh, this book has been with me for so long. So at one point it was called A Halo of Stars and Embers. No, I don't know what that means. at another point it was called Saints Ruin. Again, don't know what that means. Then when I went, when I queried it, it was called Saint of Ashes, because there is a line in the book where, which I wrote, I came up with Saint of Ashes and then I wrote the line to match. So when you get to that line, everyone, that was the original title. But so it was called Saint of Ashes and it went out to my agent as Saint of Ashes, because I literally at that point I could not think of anything. Soul Let Them Burn is something that I came up with the help of a friend and my editor, and everyone just loved it right away. And honestly, I can't imagine the book being called anything else at this point. Like, I feel it's very, if I can toot my own horn for a bit, it's like very striking and like a little bit unique, I think. So yeah. We were really excited when we landed on that one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, absolutely. I love the title. It stands out so much. It's very dramatic and it's a statement, and yeah, I love it so much. And it just fits with the cover so well, because they are both such eye-capturing, you know, both the title is eye-capturing and both the cover is. And on that sort of topic of the cover, and I know you had mentioned earlier the cover designer, did you have any say in the cover, or was there anything you knew you wanted to be in the cover?
I did. I knew. So they asked me pretty early on and I said, I want an illustrated cover. I feel very strongly about this, that I want my debut to have an illustrated cover. And they were like, okay. They didn't give me any troubles with that. They asked me what kind of covers I loved and what kind of covers I hated. I'm going to tell a little story.
Please.
So I hate the color orange. I say to Gabriel, guys, who is wearing an orange right now. I hate the color orange. And so at one point, they had sent me a draft of the cover. And I was like, oh my God, it's gorgeous. But like, it's pink, you know, it's pink and it's purple. And like, what, like, why is it those colors? Like, it's called Soul Let Them Burn. Shouldn't it be like red and yellow? And my poor sweet editor, Alexandra Hightower, she sends back, well, you see, Camilla, you said that you hated orange. You underlined it. You bolded it. You put it in italics. You made it larger than the rest of the text of the sentence. And red and yellow, they kind of like, they make orange. So we went in a different direction. And I have never felt so roasted by my own words before. She was right. And so my friend likes to make fun of me all the time, because she's like, I don't know how you managed to convince your team to give you a cover for a book called So Let Them Burn that does not have but it just goes to show, you know, how accommodating my team was and how they really tried to give me something that I would love. And they honestly succeeded, because when I first saw this book, when I saw Taj's art and when I saw Jenny's composition, I cried. I really, really, really cried. So yeah, if nothing else, I can say I love this cover with my whole heart. My imposter syndrome may keep me from standing behind the content, but I will stand behind that cover.
It is so stunning. And just even like the little details as you look closely with, you know, the architecture in the background and the dragons and everything about it is just so, so fantastic. And yeah, it's so fun. And it does, it has this element of fire, but this sort of like, I mean, it's fantasy. So it's like this magical fire in a way, and it's less literal in a way. And then you start to see it and as you look closely, and it's just, yeah, it's so wonderful. And yeah, I will, if you go, I will not wear any orange. If I ever meet you in person, I will never go to any launch events wearing orange for you.
Fine, like orange didn't like, you know, slap me into a puddle and steal my lunch money or anything. I could not tell you why I find that color so off-putting. I really don't know what orange did to me, but you know, it's fine. You can wear your little orange. You look great.
As she says, holding back all of the rage.
It's fine. Fine. I get four orange if you want to.
Was there something that you learned during this publishing journey that you didn't know before going into it?
Because I feel like, okay, so I work in publishing myself, but like I work in like digital and online sales as a metadata manager, which nobody knows what that is, but I really, really love my job. So I've worked in publishing for a while, so I like thought I had a good handle on how everything works, but then I realized I don't know how anything works. Like, for example, my editor sent me an email the other day with like a lot of really cool information that I cannot share in it. And it sounded good to me, but like my agent had to call me and then like slowly explain like, what does this mean? What does this figure mean? What does this percentage mean? Because I just have no idea. I went from being a publicity assistant to a marketing operations associate to a metadata manager. So I never really learned anything about the editorial side of things. That was never me. So now I'm going through that process from the other side. I'm like, who do I ask this question? And like, at what point am I going to hear about this and all this stuff? Like, it's been an adjustment getting used to the fact that despite working in publishing, I don't know anything about publishing as an author. And so it's made me really more sympathetic, not that I wasn't before, but like to my fellow authors, because if you don't work in publishing, you just don't know anything at all. And so I spend a lot of my time when I'm in the, we have a Slack for people who are debuting in 2024, just like trying to answer questions that I know the information about, because there's honestly no other way to know the answers to these questions. So if I can help someone else, it feels a little bit more like less scary. I don't know.
Absolutely. That's such a wonderful answer. And it's so true. I can say from like, as an outsider or as a reader, it is very like this like mythical beast that like you don't really want to poke and prod. And you know, I have goals and aspirations to write and publish books, but it's really valuable, I will say, to learn from people I talk with on the podcast about the publishing world. But then I read about something that happened or something, someone tells me something and I'm like, how does that even, what? And so it is, you know, as the reader and the consumer of the books that they publish, it is very just like, I'm so on the outside of it. So yeah, I just really love also just hearing your acknowledgement of it is confusing and, but wanting to sort of shine that light for others. And yeah, so yeah, that's really wonderful. Thank you for sharing.
Of course. It's just like, I feel like a lot in publishing is that we all feel so grateful to be here and so afraid that anything that we do manage to get is going to be taken away if we say or do the wrong thing, or like if we're quote unquote a problem. So we end up like crowdsourcing a lot of information, and that can lead to a lot of like cross-contamination, because sometimes what happens to like publishing has no standardization, so what happens to someone not happening to you does not mean that you're more or less successful than they are. And like sometimes things happen that are impossible to happen, and sometimes things happen that will never happen again and have never happened before. So when you're sharing information like that, it can kind of be a slippery slope of like comparison and like what measures success. So I think like I mean, this is off topic slightly, but like for you as somebody who would like to pursue publishing, if I have any advice at all, it's just to set your own personal metric of success. I had like a little list of like author dreams that I wanted, which included an illustrated cover, like things I have control over, not like hit the New York Times bestseller right. list, like ask for an illustrated cover, right. not even ask for one.
Yeah.
You have to really have your own metric and measurement of success, because this, there's no standard, and this like bombing your first book doesn't mean you'll bomb your second. Or like V.E. Schwab's very first book went out of print, and then she wrote like seven more, and then they re-released her book and it hit the New York Times bestseller list. Like there's no metric of success, there's no time limit on success, and you just have to find a way to be personally satisfied with what you get and what you have, or you're going to be miserable and burn out of this industry. And I don't want that, especially not for queer BIPOC, because you know the world needs our voices.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course.
Well, I have to ask, this is a question I will forever be asking because it's so fun to hear everybody's answers. Obviously, there's the exciting, like, I'm going to manifest this gets made into a movie or a TV show. But if you could turn So Let Them Burn into anything other than a TV show or a movie, what would that be?
So I thought long and hard about this. And I, again, am a nerd. So I would like to see So Let Them Burn become a video game, specifically a video game along the lines of Fire Emblem Three Houses. And for those who don't know anything about the Fire Emblem series, I can't help you because I don't know anything about the Fire Emblem series, but I played Three Houses, and it was basically like, you know, you play a main character of whatever gender you choose, and then they end up becoming a teacher at a military academy, joining like a house and a route, and then eventually like playing through a war that the whole, like they're magical creatures, and then there are characters with backstory, and you can like improve your friendships and relationships and your loyalties with them, and like it changes the outcome of the game. And I just think that like So Let Them Burn would be so fascinating in that format, because a lot of it, you know, it is about like really cool dragons and like really fun battles, but it's also about like the connections between people and how you move on from war and like loving somebody so much that you would end the world for them. So I think that like as one of those games where you like have to build up your friendship point, your friendship levels with people in order to like advance the story, and like really cool battle scenes. So I think So Let Them Burn Three Houses, I think that would be a really cool
absolutely video. Yeah, yeah, I love it. And oh, what an exciting answer. And yeah, video game, oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
I love playing video games.
Yeah, and such an exciting story for a video game too. And yeah, what are you most excited for when readers read this story?
I'm really excited. I'm hoping that this book touches people in some way. I worked out a lot of things personally while writing the book, a lot of things about myself internally, and a lot of things about the world around me through this book. You know, it involves a lot of like, how do you move forward when you feel like you peaked at a young age, and like praise is harder to come by, so you either have to like keep chasing it with people pleasing, which is what Alara tries to do, or you have to just pretend that you don't care and like take bad attention as any attention at all, which is what Farron does. You know, like I hope that people take away that like it's never too late to do the right thing, and like the right thing is can be something that you just feel. Like in Reeve's backstory, you know, he a long time ago, while the war was still on, he discovered that there was a war going on, and he was like, this seems wrong, let's stop colonizing this island, and he was 12 years old. But then you have like other characters who are like members of the military, and they're very much like, you know, we want to change it from the inside. Like there's no wrong way to do the right thing. There's so much that I put in here that I really just hope that some aspect or part of it touches people, makes them feel seen, makes them feel not alone, makes them feel like the messy, like unfamiliar parts of them, who they are, who they want to be, just feel a little bit more achievable, because these characters and their mistakes and their flaws and the way they overcome or usher in their own demises just feel so relatable to them. I want especially young Black teenagers to read and enjoy this and know that, like, we can fly on dragons and we can have the magic and we can be the chosen one and we can snark the gods and we can just, you know, we can do and be anything. All we ever need is the same opportunity that other people are given. So, yeah.
Mic drop. I mean, hello.
Oh, rambled, actually.
No, you didn't. That was so beautifully said, and I loved that. It's an amazing takeaway. It's an amazing just like vibe to get from the book, is, you know, for anyone who is anticipating reading it, just what to expect and what to prepare for. It's, you gave like everything and anything, and it's all amazing.
Thank you so much. I tried.
And you succeeded, more than succeeded. Oh my gosh. On that sort of same, you know, what are you excited for? What are you excited for when the book releases? And this could be anything.
What am I excited for? This is really, really silly, but like one of the editions of my book is from Satisfaction Fiction Book Box.
Oh, yeah.
Digitally sprayed edges, which was one of my tiny author dreams. Like, someone give me sprayed edges. So I'm like really, really excited to just hold my book with sprayed edges. So that's on the micro level. And then on the macro level, I'm just really excited to celebrate my book launch with my friends, because I go to all of my friends' book launches and it's always exciting to hear them talk about the book. But like, even though it's gonna kill me, and people showing up for me to hear me talk about my book is gonna be like, I don't think I'll ever get over that moment. Even if only one person shows up, I think I would just be so thrilled.
Well, I can already tell from the authors in the book world and other readers that I've seen talking about this book, that will not be the case. There are so many people excited, and oh, I can't wait. I loved seeing the sprayed edges edition of So Let Them Burn. It was so pretty. And
I might cry.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I would. It's so, yeah. And it just, and the way it matches the cover is so beautiful. So
yeah, they did an amazing job. I can't.
Yeah. And just like the excitement of events and celebrating that it's out in the world. So those are both such wonderful things. Well, your next book that is set to release in 2025, not to jump ahead, because I know this one hasn't even released, but the one question I have about it, because obviously there is very little known, but can you describe The Sinister Elite in 3 words?
Ooh, can I describe anything in 3 words? That's a good question, but I think the 3 words that I would use to describe it is eerie, and then unflinching, and then kind of sexy.
Yeah. I love it. Oh my gosh. I love it. Well, from the very little description that was announced when the book deal was announced, I can totally get the eerie vibes. And oh, well, I can't wait. That's so exciting. The best 3 words. And I guess you sort of already gave a bit of advice when you were talking about stuff you learn in the publishing world now on this journey of publishing your debut. But if you have one thing or something that would be sort of your advice to any aspiring authors.
My advice is probably never going to change, and it's just don't give up. I nearly gave up so many times in my life. First, because I couldn't finish anything. Second, because it felt like revising So Let Them Burn was actually going to kill me. And I think at one time while I was working on the book, I saw a prominent agent say that they had fantasy fatigue, and that like fantasy was like, not saying that it was over, but like that was the vibe. And here I am writing a little fantasy book, and I saw things like, you know, someone saying that they hate dragons and they're like super over dragons. And like, there's always going to be a reason or a sign that you interpret as a reason to self-reject and to just keep yourself from getting hurt, because publishing, oh, it hurts. oh, it hurts with the rejections and like your expectations versus reality constantly never being the same thing. There's always going to be a reason to self-reject. And I just think that we lose out on so, so, so many stories, so, so, so many voices. And it just makes me sad because, first of all, no matter what publishing implies, there's room enough for all of us. And second of all, like to just think of the stories that were there for me at times in my life when everything felt so dark and the only light that I had were these fictional characters and these books. Like, it did not matter to me if they were good books. They were the books that I had, the books that made me feel like I wasn't alone, or like the books that made me laugh or made me cry or just made me like feel like I had a best friend, but in book form. And to think that somebody could be denied that experience because publishing is so hostile to diverse voices at times, really makes me sad. So if you're a young writer out there, if you have a story to tell, like, please just keep going. Like, obviously take breaks and self-care, and like your mental health is more important than any career, but like traditional publishing will wait for you. There will always be an audience for your books. And just please, please don't give up, because the world needs your stories. Someone out there needs your specific story. And I would just love to see it on the shelf.
What a beautiful answer. I love that so much. No, it was so wonderfully said. I mean,
yeah,
obviously,
I felt like I was just rambling.
No, I mean, I said you are a wonderful writer because I'm reading your words, but like now hearing you talk is like, it's you. Oh my gosh, that was just so amazing. You don't understand. Like, this is,
I am gonna run away.
Oh my gosh.
That was really wonderful advice, and thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course. I just, young writers are really important to me. I was not on book Twitter. I didn't share my work with anyone. So it's just really important to me to just keep us going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have two fun sort of like Soleth and Burn Dragon fantasy related questions. The first is, what are your favorite dragon books, movies, shows, games, etc.?
So dragon related content, I started with Aragorn, because that, again, I wanted to be a teen writer, and that was written by a teen writer. I really love How to Train Your Dragon. I have a toothless like stuffed animal in here. So really, really love that. And then this is kind of cheating, but like, I'm still going to count it. I love Avatar: The Last Airbender. Dragons really come up more in like the last season than like ever before. Before that, it's just like metaphorical. I'm not going to consider this a spoiler because that show has been out forever. Like, go watch it. But like, I love all kinds of dragon lore, and that includes the dragon lore that I am not personally like the person to tell the story of, but like Eastern, you know, dragon lore where dragons are sources of just like wisdom and knowledge, and like not necessarily like fire breathing angry like malicious creatures. So Avatar: The Last Airbender's take on dragons was also really interesting and cool to me. I think those are my big three.
Yeah, I love that. I love How to Train Your Dragon. That was like, yeah, that was definitely the first,
oh,
I think, dragon media that I was, I mean, maybe like a few things, and maybe it was like a book with dragons and Magic Tree House, but that was such an exciting movie trilogy. Yeah. And yeah,
really love Hiccup. Like, he's he's a great character, and I love that he, you know what? If you like Hiccup, you will probably like Alara too. So,
absolutely, yeah. I can confirm. I can confirm. Yes,
throwing that one out there for my How to Train Dragon fans.
Exactly. Well, what media, meaning like books, movies, music, games, whatever, do you recommend for readers after they finish So Let Them Burn and they are obviously craving more?
So a really great thing is that we've been getting a lot more diverse dragon stories that I want to call out. There is To Shape a Dragon's Breath by Monaquil Black Goose, which is a adult story about a girl who has to go to a dragon riding academy that like her colonizers have put together, and it is by, you know, a Native American author. So I thought that was like really, really cool. If you prefer more YA, there is Fire with Fire by Destiny Soraya, which personally nearly ruined my life because it came out while I was still working on So Let Them Burn, and it is about two sisters who were raised to like fight dragons, and then one of them forms a bond with a dragon and the other one works with magicians to kind of like save her from the dragon. And
you said, oh, never mind, actually I was
all right, well, we don't need mine, bye. But like, but they're actually very different because that one is a contemporary fantasy and a Latinx fantasy. So again, as I was saying earlier, there is room for all voices. Yeah. But Fire with Fire by Destiny Soraya is like really, really good. There's also Shatter the Sky, which is about a girl who steals a dragon to go and save her girlfriend from the Empire. And of course, The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon, who is amazing and writes like these really huge chonky books I wish I could do what she does. But yeah, there's a lot of like diverse and queer dragon content out there, which I'm really, really excited about because I never got over dragons, so glad you're all on my level.
Yeah, no, I those are some great titles, and I recently, and I'm surprised I hadn't heard about it sooner, but I recently saw How to Shape a Dragon's Breath in the bookstore. It was face out, and the cover is stunning. And so I can't wait to read it. Yeah, it sounds
so
amazing.
Good. Yes, I'm so excited. I only read a couple of chapters before I was back on deadline, and I'm not reading any dragon books while I'm writing.
Yeah, of course.
So I can't wait to finish it, but it's like so, so, so good. And I urge everyone to check it out.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, I can't wait. You have shared a lot of amazing advice throughout this episode and some amazing stories. But I guess my question would be, what would be your advice to your younger self?
My advice to my younger self, the biggest regret I have in my life is that I've completely lost my Jamaican accent. I can understand Patois, but I cannot speak it. I just sound silly. So my biggest advice to my younger self would honestly be to embrace the things that make you different, to learn to be spiteful sooner and to keep myself, because I lost my way for such a long time trying to be what I thought other people wanted me to be. And it wasn't until I embraced the things that made me a little weirdo that I found true joy, happiness, and this success. So my younger self was just so full of self-loathing and just so angry that life seemed to be a test that she was consistently failing, and I wish that she would have grace for herself, just grace and patience, because she was doing her best. I'm still doing my best, and I love her so much.
I love that answer so much. That's just so wonderful. And just, you know, I love the message of embracing what makes you different and celebrating that. And so thank you for that wonderful answer. And thank you for just being on this episode. You are beyond iconic. You're beyond legendary. I loved hearing all of your stories, learning more about this amazing book and learning more about you. And so it was such an honor to have you here today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This was honestly so fun. You're incredible. You are the icon. And I just thank you.
Of course. I we could just go back and forth. I mean, yeah. I was going to say the same thing.
Just an additional 2 hours of us right. Saying thank you. Thank you.
Bonus content. So I just, yeah, I really, really appreciated having you here today. And where can the listeners find you?
I am on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and Twitter as Word Siren, because I love sirens and mermaids. And I have a newsletter on Substack that you can follow. And I have a website, camilla-cole.com.
Amazing. Well, listeners, go follow Camilla anywhere and everywhere, and be ready for this amazing book to release. And do you have anything upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote?
Just my friends, you know, I'm really excited for Tashi Bouillon's Stay With My Heart, Emma Lord's next book, The Getaway List, Blood Justice by Terry J. Benson Walker. Like I said, just please keep reading diversely and keep championing your favorite book. It means so much to authors, so much to authors. And pre-order my book, please.
Period. Yes. Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of Try Reading. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast. And if you'd like, you can write a review or rate the show. It helps other book lovers find these amazing guests and their amazing and iconic stories. And as always, you can follow Try Reading on Instagram at Try Reading Podcast and on Threads at the same handle. You can find this show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can catch new episodes every other Friday. You can buy books by the Try Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Try Reading link tree below. And yes, that includes So Let Them Burn. Of course, go request it at your library, pre-order it, add it on Goodreads, everything, do it all. And Camilla, I want to thank you again so much for just bringing your iconic self and your magical presence onto today's episode. It was such a joy to talk with you, and it was just such an honor to learn more about you.
Thank you so much. And I won't say it again.